Hello and welcome to another episode of the Viva Bastardo show, brought to you by the Haggerty Podcast Network. Today we have Ondrej Berkus. I know I'm totally savaging his name. He's an extraordinary watchmaker from the Czech Republic. What's interesting about Ondrej is that every single watch he makes for each client is completely different. He's such an artist. He's totally enamored with the idea of interesting materials because he was a knife maker before he began to make watches. He's totally self-taught. He's a really, really fascinating person and a real artist. So let's get into it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. So actually, I want to ask you, man, I feel like you are the only watchmaker with a nickname, which is Papi.
Maybe.
What is that? Where's that?
I mean, at least I didn't give it to myself, okay? Because you know how the George W. Daniels came to be, right? So,
Because, for instance, I mean, like, why isn't it like FP Crazy Eye Jaune or like, you know, Roger Big Daddy Smith? Like, why don't more watchmakers have nicknames?
Right, it will be much more fun. Like these are these people are way too serious, man. Like, you don't want to have them over for dinner. I mean, you don't want to have me over for dinner necessarily, but. For
why not, man? Why not?
That's a whole different set of reasons for that, right? Because I'm too much sometimes. But the nickname is from a very loud and very confused Spanish exchange student with kind of daddy issues, and I would leave it at that. From, you know, back in university.
This is not the kind of podcast to want to leave it at that, man. This is an investigative journalist podcast. Hard-hitting questions. I want to get to the truth, Ondrej.
I mean, hard-hitting was kind of what led to the nickname. I mean,
yeah. Okay. It's all crystal clear now, man. Do you have any video that you could provide? Do you have any video you could provide that we could post for on Instagram? Yes,
I mean, I was in college back when nobody had cameras on their phone. Otherwise, it would be somewhere, like for sure.
I feel lucky, actually. You have headphones. You're wearing your headphones are plugged in, right?
Yeah.
He's got headphones. I feel lucky, actually, to be honest, man, that there was no like iPhone when I was in college, because I feel like maybe.
The crazy shit we got away with, like if I was in college today, and if I was the dumbass I was in college today, I would be on the news like every other day, seriously.
Might help you as a watchmaker though, because you would be the only like pirate watchmaker.
I'm pretty sure that wouldn't help me as a watchmaker.
maybe not. So, all right. So I should actually, before we get into it, I should just full disclosure to everyone watching or listening. You are making a watch for me.
Yeah, I am.
So people should know that. But this is in no way, you are, like you say, man, I mean, it seems like there's not a lot of crazy characters in the watch world. But you seem to be one of them. Plus, you like cars.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if this would be boring to everybody, but
probably, man.
Talking about cars, I'm gonna get back.
We should totally talk about cars. I want to talk all about the watches, and we talk about cars, man, because this is a car and watch podcast. And anything podcast.
Okay, so full disclosure, I'm not on this podcast because I'm making you watch, right? Wink. not even close. But the cars, man, I'm really lucky. I'm very happy because I just pulled the trigger. Like 2 weeks ago, I pulled the trigger on the big one.
And what's the big one?
Got me the Quadrifoglio. I got a fucking Quadrifoglio, man.
Congrats, man. What color?
Red. Competizione red. Like,
no.
Is there any other color?
Yes. Yes. Like a friend of mine has one in this incredible green color, like a metallic darkish green. It's amazing.
It's insane. That green is playing the same effects as the red one. Like, you know, the shimmer and playing in the light, but it's green, not red. But yeah, that green works too. Absolutely.
Also, that car sounds amazing.
It's scary. It's like a bear, angry bear.
Yeah, well, I feel like that suits you. All right, well, let's just hang on. Before we fall down all sorts of wormholes, man, let's just why don't we talk a little about who you are? I know that you've been making watches. You're in Czechoslovakia, which is obviously the nexus, the horological nexus. There's Czechoslovakia and then there's Switzerland down there.
Well, it hasn't been Czechoslovakia for, I think, 30 years.
What? You know? Where are you living now?
The Czech Republic, you know.
Republic. Look how old you are. I'm an ancient person, man. I'm like 102. You're living in the USSR, right?
It's USSR. It's coming back.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that, man. You're right about that. That is a very good point. All right. So you're living in the Czech Republic. You haven't been making watches that long. About 12 years, I think.
Yeah.
And oddly, I was listening to a couple of your interviews online, and it's. You know what strikes me is quite surprising is that I'm amazed at how many people I've spoken to who have embarked on incredible careers, and those careers were sparked by the most kind of random and mundane and smallest of things. Like I was talking to an amazing car designer yesterday called David Beasley, and he became a car designer because he was doodling cars in his textbooks at school, and his teacher said, you should be a car designer.
Yeah.
And so for you, you had a conversation with your dad, right? Didn't he say just make a watch or something?
It went kind of that way with watches. But before that, like 6 years before that, it went that way with knives. And yeah, I was sitting in the college and, you know, lectures and everything, and I was doodling knives. So I said, well, I'm gonna make some knives, and I started. And getting kicked out of the college helped a lot, you know, to streamline me to that career.
There's nothing that focuses the mind like being fired or kicked out of things,
right?
That's how I started as an artist. I got kicked out. I got fired from my job in advertising, and I thought to myself, you know what? I'm so miserable. I'm so tired of listening to myself moan about wanting to be an artist. I'm just going to be an artist now. And so being fired was like a gift.
Yeah, I've never been fired. I've never been employed. I'm basically a class A bum.
You know what's interesting? What you just said about that you were doodling knives, you were sketching knives all the time. It's almost like your subconscious was telling you what to do.
Probably. Like I learned not to doubt myself, because even like honestly, even the stupidest shit I come up with eventually turns out into something positive. It may be a long and tough road, from the original idea to the end, to the positive end, but everything actually turns out positive in the end. So maybe, in retrospective, getting kicked out of college, like what, 15, 16 years ago. If I finished the law school, I would be miserable. I would probably hang myself really, by now.
You really strike me as a lawyer kind of person, though, man.
Right? I mean, stupid liar.
I'm joking, man. Okay, so you get kicked out of law school. You start making knives. And how long does the knife making go on for?
I mean, it's been going on for 18 years. This year, actually,
How long does the knife making go on for until you suddenly say, you know what, I should start making? Your dad says, why don't you just make a watch?
6 or 7 years.
Okay. And how was the first few watches? How did you find, like, you just made them for yourself? Did you have people like, oh, I love what you've done with knives, I want you to make a watch? How did that work?
I made a watch for myself, and it was disgusting. It was just like, no, I'm not exaggerating. It was disgusting. It was a huge, ugly brick of titanium. And I actually bought like a quartz chronograph movement because I liked the little hands on the dial, not having any idea what they do, what they are for. Just, okay, I like this layout, whatever. Good. Let's keep it. I just stuck it in the case, and, you know, I was still like learning to use a lathe back then. So actually, the biggest achievement for me on that watch was that I turned the cavity for the front crystal in a way that the crystal fit in it. Like that was, you know, that was like, oh man, I turned something on the lathe, and then I took the crystal and it went like, and it held just by, you know,
You're entirely self-taught, aren't you?
I do have friends that helped me out throughout the course of the year, throughout the years. Every once in a while, I'm on the phone with Martin Brosch from Prokop & Brosch in Prague, who actually is a watchmaker. So, you know, whenever I'm stuck or something, I call him and he walks me through it. And usually we make stuff that doesn't work, make it work. And recently, Philippe Narbel helped me like a ton. Because speaking of Philippe, right? And speaking of every disaster or stupid idea that happens, turning out positive. You noticed I had some watches stolen like 2 years ago or something.
I didn't,
you know?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
You didn't? Well,
no, I'm sorry, man.
My bag was ransacked on the night flight to Dubai, and 3 watches were stolen. Right? And it was demotivating. It was depressing and everything. It was a bad experience.
These are watches you are these watches you had made?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. These were one of them was actually the first version of this one.
Oh,
so this finished one is the second version, right? So the first one that was not working yet was stolen, right? And at that point, Philippe saw the story and he's like, you know, dude, I want to cheer you up. Why don't you come over to my shop in Switzerland and just spend a couple of days with me so I can help you out, you know, with the finishing and everything. I'm like, hell yes. You don't say no to something like that. Like, and even with half a brain, you don't say no to something like that. Right?
With your tiny, tiny brain.
Yeah, yeah. In my skull. Like Homer, sometimes it flies out of my ear, you know, whatever. And so I went to Switzerland and spent like 3 days working in Philippe's workshop. And he helped me figure out how to use the tools, what tools to use, how to do stuff better, how to do stuff quicker. And he actually helped me realize that when it comes to finishing, I may have kind of peaked, you know, because as seeing what Philip does and how easy he makes it look, and then me trying to replicate that, even though I practiced and everything, I'm at the, like, the ceiling of what I can do. And we were talking with Philip about me sending parts to finish, to be finished by him, but that's a, like, a logistical nightmare. So Philip came up with an idea. He told me, he asked me, do you have kind of like jewelry school or watchmaking school in your country? I'm like, yeah, we do. I know the boss, and you know, he's like, tell him to send you somebody. Tell him to send you a bunch of people who study there, like young people. They want to learn. They want to practice. They want to work. Tell him to send you some people, and you know, maybe you'll find someone who has like a talent too. And so I called him. He sent over a girl to try the finishing and everything, and I was blown away. So I offered her a job on the spot. She's training with me now for like 6 months, and in the summer she's going to train with Philippe, and then I'm gonna have a finisher.
So which what is great. Well, that's amazing, man. Well, that makes me think of two things. One is, I've always found that there's kind of an extraordinary benefit to not going to school for the thing you do. Because I feel like when you haven't learned, going to school teaches you enormous amounts of valuable things, but also it constrains you in a lot of ways, I think. Because you learn there are specific ways for things to be done. And you never learned those things, so that and that reflects itself in the watches you make, because there's a real sense of boundlessness and freedom when I look at all your watches. First of all, each watch you make is different and specific for each person, which is amazing. Because generally, when people talk about buying from an independent watch brand, you know, the brand will make 50 watches and they'll look alike, and you buy one of those 50 watches, but you make a specific thing. But when I look at each watch you make, because they're so different, you get such a sense of your imagination, but also the fact that you like, I don't feel like there's traditional horological ideas in those watches necessarily from a design standpoint, which I love, which is amazing.
What you said is absolutely right, because talking to like classically raised watchmakers, I feel like actually it's funny. I'm always making fun of Philippe for you know, what's the most favorite of all Swiss sentences? Was the first sentence a Swiss mama teaches her Swiss bebe?
What?
You know what it is? This is not possible.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say this is not possible.
Yeah, right?
I was going to say possible. That, man. You know what's funny? Because that when I lived in Paris and I was starting out being a photographer, and the thing I felt that was so annoying about Paris is, ah, non, pas possible, monsieur. Ah, non, pas possible. It was, and I was like, why is everything not possible?
Exactly. Like, no new things. Let's make things the way we made them for 200 years. You know, things like that, like basically, and I'm talking, when I was in Switzerland, I talked to the guys and I'm like, why don't you try this? Well, because my teacher said it's not done that way. And I'm like, okay, maybe like fire your teacher or something. I don't know. I might sound stuck up, but that's just because nobody is limiting me. You know, if I start sounding too stuck up, just tell me, you know. Knock that shit off.
I mean, that's, I don't know, man. I mean, the other thing that I notice in the watches you make is you find such joy in materials. And I suspect a lot of it has to do with making knives. because in Knives you can kind of really explore, and I'm sure that that has made you, led you to using materials. Like the other day when I said, what about mammoth tusk? Because I saw some interview you mentioned mammoth tusk. I thought, holy shit, mammoth tusk on a watch, that sounds amazing.
Right, and it actually is not just for the mammoth being mammoth, like being exotic, but it has beautiful color. It can be polished beautifully. And when you polish it, the internal structure comes out, you know? So it actually has like a visual appeal. It's not just some material you use just to be able to say you use it.
Right.
And the knives, yeah, I never liked like weird shapes in knives. My main philosophy for knives was you have to be able to like draw it at one go. Simple shapes. Yeah, I mean I hate the when there's stuff protruding out of the knife and everything. So that leads you to a problem when you use like stainless or simple materials.
It's not interesting.
That knife is boring. Boring as shit.
Well, it's interesting because what that's exactly right, man. What you're saying is because you have these incredibly simple shapes, it's almost like, do you know Brancusi, the artist, the sculptor?
I don't know anybody, man. I'm a redneck.
I'll send you a link. But you're right, man. When the simpler the shapes, that means that there's nothing, you can't hide anything. So you have to resort to extraordinary materials.
Exactly. That is what my knives are about. Like simple shapes, but appealing materials and finishes and everything. Oh, okay. But you know, the patterns in Damascus, the natural materials and everything, that's what's interesting. And when it came to watches, I mean, naturally, let's take a blob of Damascus and make a watch out of it.
Well,
how hard can it be? What could possibly go wrong?
Okay.
And here we are, 12 years later.
Well, so I saw a watch you had done, a dial with a Damascus, and it looked like wood grain. It was really beautiful. I love that, man. They're very, I mean, God, I just sound like, I mean, basically I feel like this is just a Ondřej Berkus infomercial brought to you by Philip Toledano because I'm just fanboying at this moment. Only because I'm not complaining.
Thing is,
you want me to stop? I should just stop.
No, you know what? I like it because my family, people around me, they're used to this, right? I showed that black hole tourbillon that is conveniently on the wall behind me.
How handy.
It's just a coincidence, wink. Yeah. And I showed it to my wife, and she's like, yeah, nice. Where are we going for dinner? And I'm like, okay, cool. Like that's
I've realized I have a secret test with my wife. If I tell her an idea for an art project, the less enthused she is, the better the idea is going to be. That's what I've realized over the last 20 years, is that if she goes, I don't know about that one, I go, okay, this one's going to be a winner.
not to my wife down, but it kind of works like that, right? But what I wanted to say before I started writing on my wife is my dad, my mom, they're used to this, right? They're not amazed. So, and I see these watches every day. I work every day. So I'm in the shop and this is just a normal Wednesday to me. Like a few seconds before we started this conversation, I was making a part for 1 second remontoir on the lathe. Like drilling a piece of brass with a 0.3 millimeter drill, normal stuff, basic stuff.
That's,
right?
That's exactly what I was doing, man. No way.
Right? Nice.
I was just drilling some mammoth tusk for a.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
I feel like you have this extraordinarily addictive mind, personality rather. Like you have to solve riddles, and you need new and more interesting riddles. You need to be fed. You're like hungry for these puzzles to unwrap, to solve. Do you think that's true about you?
It absolutely is, and that is the reason why I actually don't own any watches. Like I don't own any of my knives. I don't own any other knives. I don't have any watches. I don't have any of my or other watches, because the watches, the most interesting watch is always the one up here, right? The one I'm imagining. That's always the most interesting one for me. And the building of them for me is like solving a puzzle, I pretty much draw up a problem for myself and then I solve it. And when it's solved, it's no longer interesting. Like on this convenient one, I was the whole build, because this was not for a client. This was made originally for me, for myself, right? So this was made with, this is what I make when I'm not influenced by a client, right? So, you know, that's all my crazy poured into a single watch. And I was actually, the whole build, I was thinking I will keep it. I was determined I will keep it when it was done. And it was done, we took the pictures, we took the video. I wear tested it for about 2 weeks, and I'm like, fuck it, I need the next one. And I'm making the next one, like completely different than this one, but I'm making another watch for myself that will eventually end up for sale, because when they're done, they're done. I don't give a shit.
That's so interesting. You know what's interesting, man? Do you find you make what you create is more interesting if you create it with the idea that it's for you versus for someone else?
When there's two people involved, there's always compromises, right? There's always a bit of a to and fro and exchanging ideas and making something that we will both like, right? And when I'm making something for myself, exhibit A, right?
Okay. Have there been massive compromises in the watch you're making for me? Has it been, you could tell me now in front of millions of listeners.
Millions? Oh, nice.
Millions, Andrzej, millions.
I would like to state at this point that my waiting list is already longer than my life expectancy. Okay, so millions of you out there, thank you. What was the question?
I was asking if you felt like our conversation, I know that I'm quite hard to work with, because I don't really, as an artist, I don't really like working with other people, because I always feel like almost everyone else's ideas are shit and mine are amazing. That's, which I know is kind of not true, because there are some people who have amazing ideas. And I'm wondering if
in our conversation.
I'm wondering if I feel like, do you, when I send you texts and stuff, like, what about this? What about this? Have you ever gone like, oh, that's just terrible? Yeah, you have, haven't you?
No, never.
Bastardo.
Bastardo.
I was going to ask you something great. No, go on, go on. Sorry.
Sorry. The biggest compromise was the year we're making it. Because I originally had you in, like, I don't know when. I actually lost track. And it's funny how these things go, because I have it all planned. I have it all set up and everything. And then at the last point, at the last minute, somebody drops out. And every time somebody drops out, I'm at that moment in conversation with somebody else. I just mention it like I need to vent. I need to bitch about something. Like, oh man, I spent hours designing the project for somebody and he pulled out at the last second and they're like, oh, and they take it as an open spot. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
And is that what I did?
And I find it really hard to say no because it's difficult. You know, you probably know, but it's frustrating when you're trying to grow your business, right? You know what's more frustrating? When you're trying not to grow.
Listen, man, I feel like there's going to be very few violins playing sad music for you. Yeah, if this is your problem.
I'm a master of bragging while complaining. But
let's just talk about that for a minute, because when was there a radical change in your business? When was that? In 22 or 21 was it or 20? When did that happen?
2 years ago, around this time, around Christmas, 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. So until before that time, you had been making how many watches, would you say? Or what was your kind of, did you have a waiting list before that or not?
No, I had nothing. We were always, I keep saying that we were always like two invoices away from bankruptcy, sometimes like three invoices behind, man. Like it was crazy. I never had any idea if I'm gonna have enough work next year. And then, I don't know, it just, everything exploded crazy. And I don't know, it kind of happened on its own, seemingly. Like,
I think the work has something to do with it, but... Well, the work has everything to do with it, man. I mean, what you make is so different from what everyone else makes. And also because you never repeat a design, that's hugely appealing to people who love art or collect watches, I guess. But do you have any idea of anything that might have made your watch cause this explosion?
Properly taken pictures, maybe. Like,
were you just with an iPhone? Were you just taking them drunk with an iPhone, and then suddenly?
I have a Samsung, but I'm not gonna dispute the drunk part. But you know, every photographer I worked with lives far, far away, because you know I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm basically it's us, a hill, and then Ukraine, basically. Okay. You know. They call it Slovakia, but we call it a hill. Anyway, so everyone is freaking far away. It's like 3-4 hours drive, and I got horses. I got, you know, I got stuff to do. So this is, you know, it
you
wasn't
have a quadrifoglio.
Now, right? But
not then.
Not then. Not back then. So it was never a priority. And then I discovered I had one of the greatest photographers, watch photographers ever, Jiří Vratislav. He's tagged in all my pictures on Instagram, so he's easy to find. And he lives like 10 minutes away from me. And he reached out to me and he's like, can I stop by for, yeah, take some pics, have a coffee or something? I'm like, hell yeah. When are you coming? Like, should I turn the espresso machine on right now, or like wait 5 minutes? When are you coming?
Should I put some pants on? You know, pants.
We don't care about that. Nobody cares about that.
Like, no one cares about pants.
Like when there are watches on the table, nobody even looks at me. So whatever. And so he came over. He took some pics, and I think. When we posted another conveniently placed one, that one, the Minion.
I love that one, man.
Oh, man. I recently had a meeting with the owner of it, and I tried to buy it back, and he just wouldn't. He won't.
I thought you didn't want to own watches.
I wouldn't wear it. I would just have it. Now I'm making another one.
That's kind of amazing that I mean, you know, I guess because it's an Instagram world, I suppose, at the moment at least, right? So that the moment you had, you were making the raw material was there, the watches were there and they were beautiful and extraordinary. They just need to be photographed well.
Yeah. Because it's,
and now
it's
you
a
have
visual,
how long?
It's
how
a
long,
visual pain.
How long is the wait list?
Like I said, longer than my life expectancy, especially with the quadriportio, man.
You have a so wait. Okay, well, we should actually talk about that. I feel like is there a car? Is there a dream car situation? Like, is there a car that you would like to have? If you could, no expense spared. If you could have any car.
No, I'm set. I have 500 baht.
Oh, which I love is that just car.
That's the most fun you can have while not being naked. You know?
Also, I feel like that car has the most ridiculous exhaust for what, I mean, you hear that exhaust coming around the corner, like, holy shit, what is that? Is that a 12-cylinder front-engine Ferrari? And then this little air bar comes around the corner. And it's so great. Every time I see one, I laugh, and then I kind of want to have one. Okay, it's just,
You absolutely should. I mean, everybody should have one. Even the basic 500 is a lot of fun. I had a basic 500, and that's the only car I had that I sold and that I missed. And then in October, I think we were in Sicily for a longer weekend, and we rented a 500. And I'm like, oh my! So I was driving around in Sicily with the roof open because that was the sea. It was the cabrio. And I was like, oh man, I need this in my life. And like a week after we got back, I got the Abarth because I couldn't live without it. And it's cabrio as well. So that's amazing. And speaking of the noise, mine is pretty much straight piped. So there is...
Well done, sir.
quite a substantial amount of the noise. And we got the little filter on the pop off valve, so it goes and it's just
I love that. Wait a minute, you mean to tell me, man, that you have no? If you had a zillion dollars tomorrow, you would be like, you wouldn't want to buy some. There's not some car that's lodged in the Andrej brain that you would be like, oh, I must. This is the car, the dream car.
No,
that's amazing, man. I have to say. Especially living in America, which is the land of wanting more all the time. I mean, I feel like the West actually is the land of wanting more all the time. That's kind of a pretty extraordinary outlook on life.
Like, I'm gonna say I have a 4-cylinder. I have a V6. I have a V8 in my SUV. And I might slightly be inclined to somewhere in the future getting a screaming V10.
Oh, like an Audi R8 V10?
Audi.
For those of you who are not
watching. That's what you go to? Audi is what you go to when you say screaming V10.
You know why, man? For those of you who aren't watching the YouTube channel, Andres just gave me a look that would wither. You gave me a look that would wither plants, man.
Everybody in San Agata Bolognese gave you that look right now, man.
Because you know what? I'm not a Lambo geezer, man. I'm not a Lambo geezer. I would never want to own a Lambo. I feel like, unless it was an old one, I would take an old Lambo. A geezer.
That's what I'm talking about. I wouldn't want a new one.
Yeah, okay, but let me just say, your idea of what old is different from my idea of what old is. I'm talking old like 70s old. You're talking old like 90s old. Actually, you know what? I would take a Diablo.
Maybe too.
A Diablo, a 90s Diablo in that purple color. Pretty good.
Yeah, that is good. That is really good.
That's pretty good.
When it starts.
That's a factory feature, starting. You can opt for the. Yeah. You can opt that. You can check that box when you're buying the car at the factory. Do you want it to start or not start?
Or maybe start. It's a lottery.
Or maybe start. Yeah.
I've had Italian cars. Funny thing is, I've had Italian cars. Like I've had like four Alfa 156s over the years. And every time I had Italian car and another car, like, for example, British, the Italian was...
My condolences.
Yeah, exactly. The Italian was the reliable one.
Okay, just out of interest, what were the English cars that were...
Like a
Rover?
A Freelander.
Oh, a Range Rover, Land Rover-y thing.
Yeah, as we call it, bend over freeloader.
That's right.
That was just a vendetta from the British Communist Party. That was just insanely unreliable.
It's
think
ironic, really. It's ironic because those cars are sort of built and designed as like a tool watch, basically, as a car, right? This functional thing that's supposed to, but then it's just it'd be like a Rolex Submariner that would just let in water all the time.
Yeah,
it just leaks water. You just say, oh, look, the watch is full of water now, and I went diving. Yeah.
Well, I went through like 4 or 5 head gaskets in that car. So that remark on leaking water actually hit closer than you thought.
How many head gaskets does it take for you to go, you know what, I think this car is not for me? I mean, usually like after 2 or 3 head gaskets, you go, okay, maybe I should get a different car.
No, I had it for, I don't know, 4 years. Remember, I had no money back then. So just kind of fixed it, botched it, and kept going.
Right.
So, that was just a terrifying and depressing car, just overall.
But, usually, well, yeah.
You know, people around me, they are like, you can put people around me, like my loved ones, you can put them in the, like, the worst shitbox death trap ever. And if it has heated seats, they will love it.
Well, heated seats make up for a lot. They can count for a lot.
Yeah, like the Quadrifoglio, it has the sparkles, right? They are not heated. So that's the best car in the world right now for me. And everybody in the house will hate it.
I bought my first new, well, I leased my first new car ever. I've never owned a new car, and a couple of years ago I leased an Audi all-road wagon, whatever they call it, and it has the cooling seats, the ventilated seats, but the alarming thing is, in the summer when you're sweaty and you activate the ventilated seats, it makes me feel like I've soiled myself. Like, I feel like I've peed and it's gone all out my back somehow. Do you know what I'm talking about? Or is this just me?
It might be just you.
Okay. Maybe it's just a geezer thing. When you're past 50, that's what happens.
Maybe it's the Audi. I mean, like, you know.
Well, you know, after 50, it could be that I've peed myself, man. I mean, it happens. I peed myself earlier on during our conversation, but I didn't want to say anything.
I noticed. I didn't want to mention it.
Shifting around. Yeah. I was just. It was the towel. I have a towel underneath me now. Nice. How did this conversation go from watches and the beauty of creation to me pissing myself while I'm talking to you?
I don't know, man. It's just life.
It's just what happens, man. Shit happens. Piss happens.
But bodily excretions, that's life, man.
It is life. So
imagine having this conversation with, I respect him immensely, but imagine having this conversation with Roger Smith.
Tell you, man, Roger Smith loves a good, he loves a good discussion about excrement and soiling himself.
He does.
No. I have no idea, man. I would be so delighted if he did. I have no idea. But I can't imagine, I can't see that happening with many watchmakers. I mean, you're kind of this, you're like this sort of pirate in the Czech Republic who, you know, self-taught, who makes these extraordinary things. I mean, do you always have, do you, How does it work often when a client comes to you? Do they just say, oh, I like these three watches you make, or are they very specific, or how much freedom do you have to do your own design now versus when you started out?
I have more and more freedom. Like these days, the amount of input from the client is in like single percents, like up to 5%, and then they just let me do what I do. Because and when they're specific, you know, when they try to be specific, I just mentioned, you know, you came to me because you like what I do, and maybe all this input is pointing us somewhere that I personally on my own wouldn't go. And they're like, oh shit, really? Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's interesting. So do people come to you? Because, you know, when I saw what you did, I want you to, it's so interesting because I remember having that same conversation as a photographer when I used to work a lot for magazines. I would say, look, you've come to me because you like what I do. There's no point. But sometimes magazines would come to me wanting me to do things that other people had done. And I hated that for a variety of reasons. Most of importantly, I never wanted to copy someone else's work because it felt like it was stealing. But do people come to you with other watches, like from other brands, and go, I'd like something like this, or never?
Yeah, you use that for inspiration. You can. I mean, as long as you put your own twist on it, like there is very little in watchmaking that hasn't been designed, done, developed, tried, tested, you know. There's very little to be discovered in watchmaking. And sometimes when you see a new watch that is really comes with something new, and it's sometimes disappointing. Like, this is what we've been waiting for.
This is interesting, man. Can you tell me, do you have an example, or you can't really say?
It wouldn't be
political.
No, it's not political. It's I would hate to take work from somebody.
Like, fair enough.
Clients ask me, what do you think about this watch? What do you think about this watch? I'm like, dude, I can't tell you. You don't want to know, and I can't tell you, because then you will not order it, and I might not know this guy personally, but it's your call, it's not my call.
Can you think of any watchmakers that you really like, or people you think are doing really interesting things?
Watchmakers that I like personally.
What they're doing.
Personally, Philippe Narbel is like second to none in the finishing, and the watch he's making is insane. There's no other word for it. The new one from Simon Brett, I saw some parts and I'm blown away. And I saw a render, and then I saw just some screws, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? That is a crazy thing, and it's going to be a big hit, because I think it's already sold out with just a few parts made so far. So that's insane. And he's a great guy. He's awesome. We had a beer when I was in Switzerland. He's just so much fun to be around. And
that makes sorry, go on, man. Go on.
No, I was running out of steam already. So please.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, do you ever feel like you, at some point, you would say, okay, I'm going to make a series of, say, 10 watches that all look the same, like an edition of 10 or something? You'll never do that.
No. I don't think so. There is pressure, obviously, to go that way, because everybody's going that way. Everybody's dreaming of making more watches and making more money for whatever reason. I don't know.
You don't care about the money, do you?
I don't give a shit. Seriously, I really just don't give a shit. my needs are met. I have an inexpensive lifestyle. I was able to afford my dream car at 36 with money I made using my hands. What more do I want? Like, everybody I tell, and I'm glad you didn't go to that place when I told you that I'm getting a finisher. Everybody goes to assumption, oh, so you're going to make more watches. I'm like, hell no.
You know why I didn't say that? Because I don't really know anything about watches, man. Or I don't, like, you know, when we talked about, and it's funny, I was thinking about this earlier on, like, you know how people, the tourbillon, all the, I don't know anything about how watches work. I don't really understand the mechanics. I don't really care about how they work. I actually just care about the thing, like the beauty of it all. And so for me,
the artifact aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's, I feel like, That's your language, man. Is the materials, like the textures, the to me, it's such a extraordinary thing. But I know that a lot of watch people do care about what it does and how it works and all the rest of it, like yeah. The tourbillon and all the. I don't even know what a tourbillon is. What it does? Can you hear all the subscribers unsubscribing as I'm saying this?
Yeah, I can hear it clicking in my ears, man. That's crazy.
The thousands.
And actually, that's like a bold statement, what you just said. Like, admit, it's like, hey, everybody, I'm Phil, and I have no idea how watches work. It's like, hello, Phil. Yeah.
Cool. it's like Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, yeah, but I was the same about cars, man. I have no idea how cars work. I don't really care if it's a 12 or a 10 or a 4. I just care about the thing, the history of it, how it looks, how it feels, how it sounds. I don't care about any the mechanical bits never excited me. It's the kind of the story, the romance, the design, all that stuff. I mean, maybe yeah. I'm a shallow bastard because of it. I don't know.
Yeah, you are, but nobody cares. it's your thing. It's your like way you operate, and that's fine. I mean, with me, I like what you said, what you do, but I'm kind of a informational sponge, so I have to know everything about everything. Like I have to like. Basically when I get a new car, I just pretty much take it apart just to know how everything is working, how it's designed, how it's engineered. You know, I'm not taking cars apart. I have a mechanic that can do that, but you know what I mean? Like I need to know. Like,
I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean.
I can see that the textbook example of blank expression right now.
I have no idea what you mean, man. I mean, the idea of taking things apart is utterly terrifying to me because I feel like, first of all, I'll panic and then I won't be able to put it back together and then it'll be broken and then I'll be so mad at myself for being stupid that I couldn't. Yeah.
That's how you start a watchmaker career. or you know, car mechanic or something. Everybody starts that way.
Yeah, you might be right. I find that really the whole thing you just said, man. Not the pissing my pants part, but after that, just about the idea. It's you're kind of an amazing geezer, man. Not to get all like bromance on you, but. The idea that you're not, I think that the fact that you're not interested in money makes such a huge difference in what you create. Because like you say, then you're never going to make series of watches just because that will be an easy way to make money. You'll always be pushing yourself to make different things every single time. And you'll always be exploring. You'll always be curious. That's kind of beautiful, man.
I can't imagine doing it any other way, honestly. Even the thought of making like 10 watches, 10 examples of the same like design, like why?
Because the idea is always my blank expression.
I don't get it. I just, why would I do it? Like, machine the same part 10 times over. What? Why? I would lose because my mind probably. Even more than I lost heroin.
Yeah, which is a lot. You love ideas.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to everybody wants to grow the business, and I just want to grow in a different direction. I want to know more. I want to know how to do more. I want to, explore more ideas.
You don't want to grow the business. You don't want to grow the business. You want to grow yourself.
Yeah, I wanna be better. Like every day I wake up, I wanna be better than I was the day before. Like you don't always succeed at that. There are days where I like suck giant donkey dick, but
That's a horological term, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's a part of
I think Philippe Dufour coined that term.
I'm sorry, I don't know the guy, so but I hear he's funny, so he might have.
Oh man, that's genius.
Somebody's gonna pee their pants very soon, I think.
Hang on a minute.
No, not you. You're done already. What I mean is, actually, I don't know what I mean. Yeah, everybody has bad days. Everybody has days where nothing works, and it's frustrating. And right now, when I'm making all the watches by myself, I mean, I use CNC lasers for templates. It's not all handmade and shit, but I'm transparent about it. Ask me about any part and I will tell you truthfully where it came from, how it came to be. So it's not smoke and mirrors and Swiss marketing. Anyway, I'm in such a good mood today. I don't have the luxury to just call it quits when I don't feel like working today. I kind of worked myself into a corner because when the influx of people, when it came first, right, I messed it up and I thought, oh, this is not gonna last. I gotta take the opportunity. So I promised way too many watches for the next few years. Basically, next year, I'm at the end of that, so that's good. And I'm going to have the girl, the finisher girl, helping me out next year, so that's fine. But I have way too many watches being made right now. I'm making like 10 watches a year by hand, so it's doable, but it's crazy. And
so how long? I'm going to ask a dumb question because I imagine that every watch is different, and every watch has different complications. They all take different amounts of times. But is there an average? Like, is it a 2 or 3 month period to make one watch?
It's usually 6 to 18 months.
Okay, clearly I know a lot about watchmaking.
That's not a question of watchmaking. It's a question of me not being a fully functional human being and jumping from one project to another. So I have like 8 projects going on at the same time and jumping between them, doing a little bit on this one, doing a little bit on that one.
Do you like working like that? Do you find that in a way leaping from one project to another kind of keeps you fresh and interested in all the watches, or would you prefer to work on one for like 6 months?
Oh, that would kill me. it's the only way I can operate because I can't keep concentration for very long. So when I'm sick of project A, I procrastinate by working on project B and all the way through like G, I, J, whatever, So I'm actually being a slacker while being productive.
Right.
I'm basically just fucking with my own brain to keep myself working, you know?
You're hacking your brain.
Yeah. I have to, because otherwise I'm useless. Like in a real life, in normal, like everyday life, I'm the most useless person you will ever meet.
We have so much in common, man.
Right? Like if I didn't have my wife, I would be probably like in a ditch somewhere, dead, you know, stuck to death. Because I get to work and I forget to eat and I forget to drink. And then I feel like shit and actually have no idea why. And then she comes in, did you eat anything today? I'm like, well, now that you mention it, I might have like not eaten the whole day. So that's, you know, I'm weird.
Just out of interest, do you eat the same thing for lunch like every day? I don't know why I asked that question. I feel like I would if I could.
No, honestly, I have no idea what I had for lunch today. I don't remember.
Schnitzel?
I think maybe it was pasta.
It was a long time ago, in all fairness, man. What was it, like 3 or 4 hours ago? I mean, you know, who could remember that?
Four hours.
Yeah. Well,
the normal everyday stuff just escapes me. You know, that's why I'm always the happiest when I'm in the workshop. Let's put it more like eloquently, right?
The atelier.
Oh, we're two idiots, man. It's just incredible.
We could keep going for hours. Just we talking just, about nothing I, for hours, man.
I think we just created a dumbass resonance.
What?
A dumbass resonance. Like, atelier?
Atelier?
That's insane.
Well, in describing yourself, man, you're kind of creating this incredible, weaving this incredible image of this kind of crazy artist working in his shed, not eating, you know, hair. Or, I mean, you need to be. I feel like I need to get you a stylist, man, to get the crazy artist thing more. Like, you know, some weird clothes, maybe a monocle, a top hat. I'm just throwing out some ideas here, man.
It's landing.
It's working. You're really thinking about it.
Yeah.
That's the
kind of like Rob Zombie look.
Exactly. Like
one eye.
Yeah, like Magnus Walker. You look like Magnus Walker.
Yeah, that could work. We could make that work.
Just out of interest,
Magnus Walker.
Yeah. Well. He has a lot of layers on. Who knows what's happening under there, man? Out of interest, have I been pronouncing your name correctly or have I been mispronouncing the entire time and you've been too polite to say?
How have you been pronouncing it?
Oh, here we go. Ondrej. Is that right? Or is that wrong? Is it totally wrong?
You know what? They call me Ondrej in Dubai.
Oh, my God. You fucking let me just say that like 18 times during this podcast. And how do you say your name?
Well, look at you making an idiot out of yourself and then bring in attention to it. I mean,
I'm very straight. I'm very transparent, man.
It's in the original Czech form. It is unpronounceable in English.
I'm amazing. I've got an amazing ear, man. Let me have it.
Okay. Originally, in Czech language, it's Ondřej.
Ondřej.
Yeah, well, you fucked it up again.
What? I fucked it up? What? Really? Ondřej. Ondřej. I feel like it's Ondřej.
It's like something out of Ice Age or something.
Yeah, it was like a sort of a, yeah, it was like a prehistoric man. It was Ondřej. And then I bounce up and down like that a little bit. You got to do that when you say that. That's traditional. Czech tradition.
Yeah. I am a little bit of a Neanderthal like shaped ape. So yeah, that works for me. Absolutely works for me.
All right, man. Well, look, I feel like I've taken a lot of your time. This has been the most delirious and glorious conversation I've had since like 1972. I mean, maybe you should do a residency for an idiot, like an idiot residency where an idiot comes and stays with you for like a week and blathers. And I could be that guy.
You're welcome.
I just sit in the corner and go, Andrzej, in the corner.
I mean, add some beats to it and, you know, a bit of auto-tune and you're
there. Oh, you're like, right, man. You're right.
Next summer hit, man.
It could be the next Ibiza club hit.
Yeah.
Well, look, man, honestly, I want to say thank you so much for coming on. It was really an enjoyable conversation.
Thank you.
I love what you do, and we'll obviously be talking again. And how long do you think? When do you think my watch will be ready? Just have interest. Put you on the spot. Now it's public. Mm. Next weekend is almost. I think next weekend you'd mention.
Next weekend, maybe the weekend after.
Perfect. I'll clear my calendar. All right, man. Well, look. Cool. Thanks again Very for cool. coming on, man. It was really lovely chatting with you, man.
And sorry to everybody, you didn't learn anything about watches.
Apologize for the most uninformative podcast we've had so far.
Exactly. But it's a record, you know.
Thanks again, man.
I'll take that. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.